Father, thank you for this chapter and how it shows us how you work and how your people respond. Help us to take these lessons and apply them in our lives. In Jesus' name. Amen. Right. We've been working through Genesis for the last quite a few weeks. And I thought it wouldn't hurt, since this passage is actually the climax of the whole of Abraham's life, to just do a quick summary. So bear with me while we do a quick summary. After Noah, there are 16 verses with 8 or 9 generations of people in them. So that is speed movement. It starts with Noah and his children. Then it says, and Terah was the father of Abraham. And then we come to chapter 12, where Abraham really becomes the central character for the next 11 chapters. So, God speaks directly and personally to Abraham in the middle of a big family and tells him to up and move. He's got a father, several brothers and sisters. They've got children, most of them except him and Sarah. They had no children. And God says, move, Abraham, leave the family behind and go. That may not sound too odd to us because we are used to moving around the country. But in that culture and at that time, family was everything. A bit like it probably was here 50, 60, 70 years ago when there were a lot of people who'd never been to Birmingham. But it's not like that now, is it? We go all over the place, most of us. We travel, we go on holiday abroad. But then people didn't move much. And God says to Abraham, move to a new place. So in fact, didn't tell him where, he just said, go. Leave your country, your people, that's relevant, and your father's household, and I will show you where you're going. And he gave him promises of making him a great nation. This is the only one of the family with no children. So off they went to Abraham and his wife Sarah. And we're told Lot went with him. That was his nephew. He possibly went because with no children, maybe they thought Abraham needed somebody in lieu of children. So maybe that was why Lot went. We don't quite know why. Anyway, when he got to a place where he stopped, all's well for a while. And then there was a famine. And when there was a famine, you didn't just go to Tesco and buy more. You had to go to where there was food. So he upped and went to Egypt. There was a bit of a trouble there, but God intervened. You can read it yourself. It's chapter 12 still, if you want to afterwards. But God intervened and got him back on track. And then in 13 and 14, we had the ups and downs of life with Lot. It makes you ask the question, should Lot have gone with him? I think the answer may be no, but he did. But God got him out of those problems, and that took 2 chapters. In chapter 15, God was again making promises to Abraham, focusing on a son. They were both as old as the oldest of us, probably, here tonight, at the time. And I don't think the oldest of us are thinking of having children anytime soon, are you, Barbara? No. You're not the oldest, I know, but you just came into my view. So the promises of blessing were focusing on a son. And Abraham and Sarah must have thought, what's God on about? Has he not noticed the calendar? Or words to that effect. There was also a covenant that God made with them. That's like a marriage covenant, an agreement between two parties to keep two conditions. And that was a strange ceremony, which you can read in verse 15. It sounds very odd to us because it would be odd here and now. But there are old documents from the same time in different parts of the Middle East, which are very similar. So it does seem that it is perfectly valid, if rather strange, ceremony. Chapter 16 was not a good year. Abraham and Sarah, still no child. God was still mentioning a son every so often. And Sarah got fed up with it and decided to get him a son at any cost. So, and this again is something we wouldn't do today, but it was an accepted thing to do in those days. So she gave him her maid and said, have a son with her. Then we shall have a son. And we can all stop worrying about not having a son. So they did that. Now, that was not God's idea. That was Sarah's idea. And God said, as sometimes happens, yes, dear, and did it. Not a good plan. Ishmael was born to Hagar. That upset a lot of relationships and caused all sorts of stresses. But he was there, so there was not a lot to be done about it. Chapters 17, 18 and 19, I'm moving at speed now, the covenant was reinforced and circumcision was introduced as a permanent physical sign of the covenant. The people of God, the men, were all circumcised, the boys at 8 days old. When God introduced it, all the men were circumcised then and there. That included Ishmael, who was growing up a bit by now. But the interesting thing in these three chapters is that three visitors came along and were passing Abraham's encampment, which he was well off, so it would have been quite a rich encampment. And as was the habit, they were invited to stop and have a meal, which wouldn't have come out the freezer. It would have to have been started from scratch. They killed the fatted calf, if I remember rightly. So they'd have been there a while that was done, as you can imagine. And they talked with Abraham, as was the thing to do. You talk to your visitors. Didn't just leave them watching telly, because they hadn't got telly. And they were talking about the wickedness going on down in Sodom, which was a nearby town, where all sorts of really awful things were happening. Read about it. It was awful. And the interesting thing, these visitors, it transpires, were sent by God. In fact, they might well have been angels looking like people. One of them might even have been God looking like a person. It's not totally clear. But the really interesting thing is they discussed with Abraham what should be done about Sodom. What an honour. God saying, what shall we do? Can we save any of these people? That's his concern, to save people, that we're in this awful place. And that was a huge honour for Abraham. And in the end, they went on, and you probably know that story, Sodom was completely destroyed. Lot and his wife, who were there at the time, who shouldn't have been there at the time, because it was a very wicked place, got out. Largely because Abraham had said, if there's any good people there, can they not be saved? Chapter 20. He bought his first very small bit of the land. And in 21, the promise made by those three visitors that this time next year Sarah will have a son. Sarah, age 100 or so, will have a son. She laughed. Understandably. But sure enough, this time next year, Sarah had a son, and that was Isaac. He then grows up till he's 12 or 15, and we come to this chapter that we just read. That was a pretty good summary of about 10 chapters, wasn't it? I hope you were able to follow it or read it. In the newish translation, it reads quite well. Okay. So in chapter 22... this is this last major episode in Abraham's life, the final test, foreshadowing so much as yet undreamt of by humanity, but secure in God's plan. He's been working towards this since time began, but particularly in these years in Abraham's life. And aren't we like this? We start out in a family, like Abraham did. We begin to recognise God, as he did when God said, move. And he did it. We all have a few diversions, like Abraham did. We get a bit of the picture of what he has for us and asks of us. Then we go off track a bit, perhaps. Other people or family make unhelpful suggestions, like Sarah did. And we have to live with the consequences. They had their baby Isaac, and Ishmael was now a teenager. That didn't go down well. It was not easy for them. But God doesn't give up. He didn't give up on Abraham. He doesn't give up on us. He kept making contact one way or another. And often that leads to at least one key encounter for the course of the future. Maybe for us or for other significant people in our family. And for the ultimate future of what's going to happen down the line. So don't think God isn't going to bother with you, even if you're not in the first flush of youth, which most of us aren't. Some of you are, but some of us aren't. So, one brief thing before we get into 22, which I'll just turn over to get to. There we are. We need to distinguish between two things, which often get muddled. What is a temptation and what is a test? What is a temptation and what is a test? Several differences. One is the source. Do you remember Eve in the garden? Who was it suggested she tried that fruit? The serpent, which was Satan, personified as snakeified. It was Satan testing her, tempting her, with his intention to make her disobey God's will. God had said, that tree is out of bounds, don't eat the fruit from it. So Satan said, you sure said, you know the story, I won't go into it all. We'll be here all night. I love these passages, I get carried away with them, these Old Testament passages. So the intention of temptation is to make us disobey God's will, either specifically or his general rules for life. It's the effectiveness of it is Satan sticks his foot out and trips us up. Picture it that way. A test comes from God. A test is designed to train us to obey him, to teach us to trust him, to be confident, to build up confidence in God for our future walk with him. It's to get us a closer relationship with God, to keep us on track with him, to bring us into a place for future blessing and guidance. It's positive. A test is positive. We need to be ready for them so that we do our part and keep with it and realise what's going on. We need to keep our eyes on God and obey his rules. Right, we're going into chapter 22. My father loved poetry. And he loved this particular one. It's Rudyard Kipling. I'm only reading you four lines, don't worry. I keep six honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when and how and where and who. And I find that's wonderful advice. And I love it because it helps me get all the aspects together. So we're starting with what. What are we looking at in chapter 22? We're looking at the ultimate test of Abraham's commitment to God and his ways, to be shown in a willingness to let go of, even to kill, the son that was God's promise, not only for him now, but for the whole future of his race, the race he would become, and all nations. The promises were big, and that's what God had promised. And Abraham is asked to believe that in the face of the impossible. God challenges how carefully Abraham is listening to God. How quick is his response time? That is crucial here. How strong is his trust? Will he even get physically to the place where God has told him to go? Huge test of obedience and trust. For Abraham, it is the big one. Forgive me if I call him Abe. There's a few people around this area of the woods who used to be called Abraham, the older men, some of them. And I knew one of them and he was always called Abe, and it sometimes slips out as Abe. I'm sorry about that. Forgive me. So for Abraham, get him right, this is the big test. And it would be for any of us. There's a verse in 1 Corinthians 10 that reassures us that God knows what we can cope with when he tests us. He doesn't push us too much too far. He has confidence in us as well sometimes. That's what. Why? Why does he test people? Test Abe or us? To enable us to grow by trusting God, by demonstrating trust to others, by challenging others in that way, and personally drawing closer to God in these processes, so as to be ready for future journeys with God. Although in Abe's case, he was old by this time. He hadn't probably got a vast amount of future, but he was learning important lessons, and Isaac would have learnt lessons too. In contrast, of course, Satan attempts to push us away or pull us away, so that's opposite. Okay, when is this test? It's a climax of his life. He's been prepared for it for decades. It's the last really significant event in his life. So how does God test him? He gives him clear and detailed instructions to do something very specific, but very counter to everything that Abraham has come to know about God and all family values, emotions, logic, and the promise that God has given. It's the complete opposite of everything. It seems to have come as an audible message. This is God tested Abraham. He said to him, "Abraham." Abraham replied. And then God spoke more. He seemed to have heard the voice of God. He was in no doubt who was speaking. And God requires a final once-for-all action to terminate the plan that Isaac is the fulfillment of the promise. Why? But Abraham didn't ask why. Aside from being loved as much as any son, especially one born late, after hope had gone, you may know some only sons who were born late. They tend to be very, very loved and cherished. The challenge to Abraham was to let go and give up the son he had loved for 10 to 15 years. The word that describes Isaac in a minute is roughly our equivalent of lad. He would be a teenager by this time. The challenge was to let him go and trust God for the hopes that the future had offered in Isaac. But as Abraham knows God's planning for the future as well, how is he going to do it? But God often doesn't tell us how till it happens. Can Abraham trust God in this? I won't ask you to vote on that, because you know the answer, because we read it. Back to Genesis. The description of a conversation with the boy in verse 5. Wait a minute, I'll just read you what God actually said. "Take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the region of Moriah," quite a way away, took several days. "Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains I will tell you about." He didn't say, "I'll think about that for a day or two." Early the next morning, he got up, saddled the donkey, took a couple of servants and Isaac. Didn't seem to have said anything to Sarah, understandably, really. When he'd cut the wood, he set out for the place God had told him. It was several days' journey away. On the third day, he looked up and saw the mountain in the distance. So he said to the servants, "You can have a couple of days off, settle down here, we'll pick you up on the way back. We, you notice, will worship, and then we will come back to you." Interesting pronoun there. So the boy is a lad by this time, on the brink of adulthood. So he was carrying the wood. That tells us he was of a reasonable age. Possibly being an only, an old head on young shoulders, he sees what's going on. He says, "Dad, we've got the wood, we've got the fire, we've got everything up. Where's the lamb?" And did you notice how Abraham replied? He replied, "God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son." God himself will provide. He probably hadn't a clue what was going to happen. But his faith was such that he said, "God will provide." Possibly feeling very fluttery inside, for all he was a man at that moment. Just, if I tell you that Mount Moriah was very near where the Temple Mount was 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years later, just move your mind forward to the day on the hill of Calvary, a very short distance away from where today's story is taking place, on the first Easter, Good Friday, when God did indeed provide the lamb. And a few years before that, when John the Baptist, by the river Jordan looked up and saw Jesus coming towards him and said to the crowd, "Behold, the Lamb of God." The Lamb who would become the sacrifice that God had provided. This episode with Abraham was a foreshadowing of that. God was asking Abraham to do what he would do in giving up his son as a sacrifice. Not just in blind obedience, but to take our sin. I think it was 3,000 or 4,000 years probably later. Hard to be accurate. You can't be accurate. God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. Jesus was that burnt offering. John saw that 2 or 3 years earlier. The servants, meanwhile, were enjoying 2 days off. About that, I should think. Chatting, sleeping, not with any idea what drama was going on very near. The wood is prepared. Isaac is bound and placed on the wood. What was going through Isaac's head? What was going through Abraham's head? God was watching. What did Abe say to him? We don't know. It tells us very graphically. He bound his son, laid him on the wood. He reached out his hand and took the knife. I meant to bring a knife and I was going to drop it at the right moment, but I forgot that. He raised his arm and... Abraham! Sorry to wake you up, Doris. Abraham! Okay. Well, I mean, he was determined to stop him. The angel was going to stop him, whatever. Abraham! Twice he said it. Abraham! Abraham! It was the voice of the angel of the Lord. I've lost my place now. Here we are. It's the voice of the angel of the Lord. It's difficult to tell if it's God in angel form. Or an angel that God had sent. It's not always easy to know which. But he'd certainly got the message from God. And spoke it very clearly to Abraham. That stopped Abraham. Just at the right time. Abraham replies exactly as he had when God first approached him at the beginning of this. And he said, Abraham, and God, and Abraham said, "Here I am." And again he says, "Here I am." And imagine how he felt as the angel said, "Do not lay a hand on the boy. Do not do anything to him." The angel wasn't taking any risks. He told him twice, "Don't do anything to him. Don't lay a hand on him. Now I know," and it says "I know," which makes you wonder if this is actually God. And then he says "God," which makes, I don't know. "Now I know that you fear God, because you have not withheld from me your son. Your only son." What a story, isn't it? What an event. The angel paused. I think they probably all needed a pause at that point. Abraham, I imagine, had fallen to the floor when the angel shouted his name to stop him. And we're told Abraham looked up. I expect when it went quiet, he probably looked up. And there before him was, in a thicket, a ram caught by its horns. You know, they have those wonderful curly horns. You can just imagine it could get stuck very easily. So the angel had said, "Here are we. There's the lamb, the ram." So they get it out. And they sacrifice it. Isaac is taken off the wood, unbound, and he'd be needed probably to help get the ram out of the thicket, because rams are a fair size. So he probably helped with that. His mind must have been in turmoil, and Abraham's as well. Abraham had said that God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, and he did. And we're told as after they've sacrificed the ram, so Abraham called that place, "The Lord will provide." Some of you may know a song from the name of God, Jehovah Jireh. That means the Lord will provide. It's only in this passage. It's the only place it is in the Bible. But there's a very good song. It says, Jehovah Jireh, my provider. His grace is sufficient for me, for me, for me. Then that bit repeats, and then, my God shall supply all my needs according to his riches in glory. He will give his angels charge over me. Jehovah Jireh cares for me, for me. That's where that name comes from. So the sacrifice is complete. They're all getting their breath back. The angel of the Lord calls to Abraham a second time, but not so urgently this time. And says, I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and the sand on the seashore. The promises about them being a successful nation that will bless the whole earth because Abraham has obeyed. And in a glorious anticlimax, they pack up, rejoin the servants and go home to Sarah. We don't know whether they told her anything about it. Only Abe and Isaac knew when they went home. They wouldn't have told the servants, I'm sure. We don't know whether they told Sarah. So what are the lessons for us? When God speaks, listen carefully. Don't say, hang on a minute, listen. And as you obey, continue to listen. I don't know if you've noticed cyclists going up roads like Bars Road with their headphones on and music blasting in their ears. It's actually quite dangerous because you don't hear a great truck coming up behind you. It really is quite dangerous. And if we put spiritual earphones on and don't listen to God, we too can miss vital information. Keep listening. Be open to God speaking at any time and ready to drop everything as Abraham did. It may be vital for our lives, even those of us that are getting older. Abraham was well over 100 at this point in time. I don't think any of us have quite reached that. So we're all, relative to Abraham, quite young. God does know what he's doing. He will direct us if we listen. If we are willing to run with it, as Abraham did. If we are willing to trust him. If Abraham hadn't obeyed, had refused, turned him down flat at the beginning, hadn't listened, had argued, failed to trust, refused to go, consulted other people, what should he do? It might have been a different outcome. Everything could have been totally different. The best people to consult on big decisions are wise and godly people who we know have a close walk with God. If we need to consult, those are the ones to consult. Not talk to anybody, everybody. Ask the world and his wife. Listen, think, pray, seek him, and obey. It can be very important. And leave anything that will get in the way behind. Amen.